Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. If this is your first time listening, I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and take a moment and share this podcast out. Write a comment, share this with your friends. Don't be stingy. We want all of your laboratory colleagues to be able to hear the wonderful information we're about to share today. If this is also your first time listening to Elaborate Topics, a little bit of background. This is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-hosts give you, the listener, tips on how to live your best life inside and outside of the laboratory, whether that be with leadership or with technical advice. And today, we're going to lean towards the leadership realm because I've got a very special friend in the house, Ms. Melody Nelson. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Stephanie?
I'm doing good. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Melly, why don't you go ahead and give the listeners a little bit about your laboratory management journey. Give us some insight about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
Well, I started on the bench in 2010, and I didn't really start my management journey until 2016, 2017. I had been on the bench for a long time and felt like it was time to take the next step. I had done a little bit of everything in the molecular space even, and just generalist in trauma centers. And so I enrolled in the clinical laboratory management program at Rush University. That's a master's of science program. And I took my first leadership job, and I began, that lab was, I want to say, you know, it was in rough shape when I got there. So I got to really cut my teeth in regulatory policy and really learn the value and the hard part of the job in that role. And then when I graduated, I took a role in operations leadership with a health system and am now over informatics. So for the last 4 to 5 years, I've been in leadership roles. And currently I am in the Doctor of Clinical Laboratory Science program at the University of Kansas Medical Center.
Yay, we got another CLS in the house upcoming. Yay. You guys are growing in numbers. So let me ask you, what's your favorite part about being in management or being in informatics? Either one.
In management, I love the problem solving. I am an operationally minded person. I enjoy strategic decision making and kind of getting all the pieces and trying to solve the puzzle. From the informatics side, I would say, you know, lab is a data engine. That's really what we are. To a lot of other teams and even exec maybe would consider us that way. And so in today's healthcare climate, it's really important to know how do we leverage data access and utility, what we're providing outside of our four walls. And so I really enjoy using data to provide actionable insights and quality improvement initiatives, whether that be for patient care or business ops. It's really what I enjoy.
Well, that kind of gives us a perfect segue into this episode, because if you were in attendance at the 2023 ASCLS Emerging Laboratory Management Conference, or ELMC Squared, Melody did an awesome talk on basically what she just mentioned, interpersonal relationships and how that increases value in management. And so I immediately hit her up and said, we gotta have you summarize this talk or at least touch on it for our listeners here at Elaborate Topics. Because as we all know, there's a great opportunity for laboratory professionals to be an active part in our clinical care team. And we talk about that all the time, about laboratory professionals shedding that stigma of being behind the scenes heroes, coming back out from behind the scenes, and really looking beyond just giving results, but also building relationships with our nursing partners, with our doctor partners, with our pharmacy partners, in the organizations where we work. And your talk at ELMC Squared this past year in 2023 was just so pivotal to the time that we're in, where, we really need our leaders in the laboratory to step up and do that. And I really felt like it gave some really actionable tips and practical tips on how to do that, because you had actually implemented those yourself in the workplace. So kudos to you. I'm talking you
Oh,
up.
thank you.
If you get
I
an
know you are talking
opportunity,
me up.
if you get an opportunity to read something Melanie has written or attend a session at a conference from her, definitely do it. But Melanie, why don't you give us just a quick summary of that talk that I just referred to, and what would be some major benefits if you are in lab management to prioritize building your interpersonal relationships in your organization?
Well, first off, you always like talk me up, and you know that just I'm a lab person. I'm always like, oh my gosh,
I'm a
like
fan.
cringe. I
I'm
know,
a
I'm a fan
fan.
of yours. You're amazing. I talk you up all the time too. and I think, I really spoke on getting out of your lab, and part of getting out of your lab is talking each other up, right? That gracious complimenting your colleagues and just really understanding kind of how we all relate and to care. I feel like the topic's important because if we never step outside of our four walls, if we never do that as laboratory professionals, we can miss out on part of our value that stems from aligning with our interdisciplinary partners. It's common for us to kind of assume that other teams just know what we do and who we are and that we care about their patients the same way they do. But really, if we're never intersecting with them and we're not verbalizing that, we're not expressing that, we're not learning from other teams and figuring out how we complement them, we can't assume that they know that because they don't know that. We haven't taken the time to ensure that that knowledge has been transferred. So I just always want to encourage people to get outside of our framework. We typically tend to be very introverted as laboratorians. How do we stretch ourselves a little bit?
Well,
Like
and
our
so that's what I was gonna mention next, because what you're talking about kind of goes against the grain. You and I might consider ourselves as like unicorns, right?
Yes.
If you take the introvert extrovert test, technically I'm an introvert, but I've got a lot of extrovert qualities, and you probably are the same. But there's a lot that would go against, just a laboratory person's natural personality. There might be just natural or personality or characteristic barriers to you that would prohibit, I guess, person being successful in that. And so what are some of those, and like, what do you think would help laboratory kind of be successful in building these interpersonal relationships? And I guess as a second question, what were some of your own personal ones, and how did you overcome those?
So I think a big one that I struggled with, I think the top three common barriers that we have are what's like environmental barriers, meaning like the time of day, the place, our space constraints, the climate that we're in, how busy we are, the noise that happens just in the clinical environment, how that can kind of just impede our ability to be overstimulated. Okay, so that's like one part of it. And then the other clinical team seems so far away, and we have to physically get up and transfer our environment in order to engage with them. So I think that's a very common barrier. I think the big one that I struggled with the most was attitudinal and even perceptual, where I did not understand what the other team needed and or wanted from me. I had no way to really. I just, I assumed that they knew what I knew. And also, I didn't really practice or self-reflect very often, in a restorative manner, meaning that like when the nurse would come down and be like, "You hemolyzed my specimen," my attitude was like, "That's not possible. Okay? And you should know that." But that's not appropriate, nor does that make friends, right? You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar, right? That's how the saying goes. So I had to really learn that I have to have this idea that I replace punishment, quote unquote, because you came in here and you said something that I find non-intelligent as a laboratorian, because how you wouldn't know, right? How would you know? They didn't go to MLS school. I went to MLS school, right? That's what I'm here for. I'm the subject matter expert on that, not them. So if I replace that mentality with this idea of engagement and investing in the relationship, person to person, human to human, then I create a shared sense of belonging and I can influence them to want to learn, right? What I have to say. So I struggled early in my career where I'd get calls and it was like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. I had a nurse tell me I didn't understand hemodilution once. And I was like, well, I do. And don't talk to me like that. Right. And that was not, that did not help our relationship. You know what I mean? Like I had to make up for that for a couple of weeks with ICU because of how I responded. And so I think it's very easy to get into that though, because we don't have to see people face to face a lot of times in the lab. We do it over call or like in, if you have Volt, you text maybe. And you can kind of be a little bit more brazen, I think, in that modality versus when you're facing someone face to face and you're having to deal with that person to person interaction.
That's a really interesting concept because you're right. It's like the same thing with like social media. There's a lot of keyboard thugs or people who are trolls, quote unquote, and who will say things, you know, more freely or have the anonymity to say things that they wouldn't necessarily say to a person's face because they don't have that face-to-face interaction to read body language or see how their words necessarily impact. And so I would actually say me and you are one in the same, because as I started to kind of look at this in my own career, I had the same struggle of, you know, when nursing teams would come down and basically act like we have some type of hemolyzer machine that we put all their samples in to hemolyze their, like to hem, or basically like we're just pouring water in them or, you know, doing something inadvertently or intentionally to impede the process of patient testing. And I had to take a step back and say, you know what, how can we, you know, we all have a shared purpose here, but how can we work together to get this done? And I would sometimes just even say, you know, it doesn't serve me to hemolyze your sample because then I have to have this conversation with you. So, you know, let's talk about how this might have happened and what we can do for it. So in situations like that, like if we were to have like a real life example, and for instance, I were a nurse and I came to your lab with, you know, a green top. And I said, look, Melody, you put this in your hemolyzer 2000 and hemolyzed it. How would you try to repair that conversation and try to move that towards removing some of the barriers and getting us towards a common purpose?
Yeah, I think you have to start by asking questions. You know, you have to start by saying, hey, okay, so like, help me understand the situation. I really like that phrase, help me understand. Mm-hmm. I use it a lot in conversations with interdisciplinary teams because it puts you in the position in the conversation of a learner. One of my colleagues kind of one-ups me on that. She's got a better way of putting it. She says, I'm really just trying to learn. Can you help me and teach me something new today? Wow. And it's like, what a great way to approach, like every time I hear her say that, I'm like, what a great way to just frame the conversation of, they're coming to you upset because this is impacting their workflow. Okay. So really the question I ask when they come in there and they're like, this is hemolyzed, or you told me this is hemolyzed and this isn't going to work. And I'm like, okay, so help me understand the situation right now. Right. Like, is this a trauma patient? Is this a patient waiting for a procedure? Is this like, what are we impeding? Right. Because at that point, the laboratory may be an impedance, even though that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to give them the right answer. I'm trying not to accidentally like kill your patient because you give them potassium in error or something, or you don't give them potassium or whatever else. You know, and so helping to understand, like, first of all, what are the stakes in this conversation? Like, you're down here for a reason. So what are the stakes? And then say, okay, here's the deal. Typically, you know, if the catheter is too small, it can hemolyze the blood cells. Like, it really does impact our test. This is how it can falsely elevate because of this critical situation that I now understand because you've told me. You know, I would be really uncomfortable giving you a potassium value that's incorrect. directly downstream affect your patient. You know, I kind of try to reframe it a little bit around like I'm caring for your patient too, you know, in a
Exactly. And I
different
think
way.
that's important for particularly some of our clinical partners to understand. I love that you try to insert that into the conversations. One of our earlier seasons, I think it was season one, I did a episode with a colleague of mine, Dr. Cami Rapp, and we talked about social capital, and we actually just talked about our own relationships because she was one of the first persons in my organization that I perfected this concept on of building interpersonal relationships. And we talked about how we kind of open each other's eyes to each other's worlds because she has a nursing background. And one of the things that I didn't realize, and we kind of came to this epiphany as we worked together more on lean projects and things like that, particularly in blood bank, was, you know, laboratory, we come from a background where we are very precise. We've got a procedure, we're following every step. You know, going outside of the procedure would equal a nonconformance for us. And so it's a very strict practice. But nursing is more fluent. It has more gray area. You know, they're looking at more literature reviews and best practices and things like that. And so she was approaching conversations from a more fluid, like, can't we just do this aspect? And, you know, I was approaching it from a, no, this is our procedure access. And both of us understanding each other's worlds, I think, helped us to be so successful. So saying all that leads me into my next question for you, which is which discipline or I guess relationship have you found to be most successful in your role? And like, can you just tell us a story of how it had been, how it's been pivotal to your success in a situation in the lab?
Yeah, and I love what you said, and I'm gonna like take a little bit of liberty and kind of step back for that because I think one of the biggest struggles in laboratory management is understanding the hills that we'll die on.
Yeah.
And we tend to do that because we think like it has to be a procedure, like this is what the cookbook says, right? Or our SOP says, and this is what we do, and there is no deviation. And in a clinical setting that's not a lab, that's not the world they live in.
Right.
They may alter that procedure on a case-by-case basis. And I've had many conversations where even I've sat with other laboratorians and nurses, and you can tell like the blood bank manager is going to die on this hill. And I'm over here as the operations manager trying to say, like, where can we meet in the middle?
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I can see that we've lost nursing. Like people are getting, it's the temperature in the room is rising, faces are getting red, you know, like we're here. Because you don't want to sacrifice the relationship for a small win that really maybe is a technicality, right? It's not, it's a technical win. It's not really an overall win.
Right.
So anyway, I just want to kind of like piece that in there. I think that that's such a great thing that you just highlighted.
No, it's a good point. And I always look at things from the standpoint of, you know, if this were my child that we were caring for, does this process make sense in terms of quality, in terms of compassionate care, in terms of, you know, how we're caring for the patient, in terms of, you know, how we're practicing, you know, safely and medically? Or is this something we just put in place back in the day and it really doesn't make sense for every, and there's liberty for us to make allowances or make changes, but we just don't want to because it's not in the procedure, you know?
Yeah. Or we don't want to have to admit that maybe our way is not the right way, in every clinical context, you know?
Very true.
So yeah, I mean, and I think shadowing in other departments is a great way to realize how much we don't know. So I'll just throw that out there as a recommendation. Find your friends and follow them around for a day and see how different their world is, you know?
So
But
the
yeah, going back,
relationship that's been most benefit to you is which one?
the relationship that's been the most beneficial for me, I think, is with the nursing educators. Because nursing and lab have such a history, no matter what organization you go to, where there's just kind of this back and forth or tension that's just innate in the conversation. And so, really reaching out to nursing educators and saying, like, hey, I really want to understand, help me understand what your pain points are with the lab. What are they? and then shutting up and letting them talk, you know, and listening. And taking, sometimes you take it on the chin, and it's really hard sometimes to sit there and hear what they say, because you're like, that's not what's happening. You know, in your brain, you're like in the conversation, you're like, that's not what's really happening. And kids are misunderstanding. But you have to kind of just like let them talk and take those notes and then say, okay, if I could fix that for you, like what would it look like to you, pie in the sky? What does it look like to you? Mm-hmm. And that's been the most beneficial, because we've been able to push out education. I learned that putting signs up in nursing areas are not effective.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't know that. I would, like, you know, typically you think like, we'll just put a sign up that tells them like what the order of draw is, whatever. And the nursing educators like shot me down. They're like, they don't look at that.
Oh, it's like sign fatigue.
It's sign fatigue. Yeah. And I was like, oh. Okay.
It's like wallpaper. They're not even looking at it.
They don't even look at it. Or like, well, what if we put it here? Well, you know, the new nurses don't know to go there, right? So like, it's just been very helpful in terms of pushing out education. Like, what's the right way to do that? Mm-hmm. And now I have a relationship with the nursing educators where they're like, hey, here's our procedure recommendations that we have. Can you look at those and see if they align from a lab point of view? Like, are they right? Like, mm-hmm. do we say something that we're not supposed to? And like, I couldn't have that access, you know, without cultivating that relationship and taking a position of like, I'm just want to listen and learn about what you do and how I can better serve you as a collaborative partner.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that, because we put up a lot of laminated signs and I actually never thought about it.
Everybody does.
But I will say I like what you're saying, because honestly, if you're listening, it sounds cliche, but you reap what you sow. So in your organization, if you are reaping gossip, I mean, if you are sowing gossip and you are sowing, you know, basically being difficult to work with and being hard-nosed and steadfast in your own beliefs, because you don't want to change, then when you need something, people are going to, you know, dish that right back at you. Conversely, what I get now is when there's an issue, you know, myself and that nursing partner or that clinical partner might talk it out. And then you'll hear things like, look, you know, I don't know which one of our areas might have dropped the ball on this or done something wrong. It could have been nursing. It could have been lab. It could have been the way we ordered it, but let's just get down to seeing how we can fix it. And so then it's more open to like, there's no finger pointing. There's no blame. We just mutually like and sincerely want to make the process better for the patient.
Yeah, 100%. It's more collaborative,
I do have another question for you. Sure. Have you found that doing this, having better relationships, having better working relationships with people, has assisted in any level of like stress or burnout that you would feel from being in management?
Absolutely. Because I'm not alone. And you develop these kind of like safe spaces. You'll find someone in like distribution services or whatever who is very like-minded to you, and you, if you need to just go have a coffee and talk about like what's going on, like you have a friend who also understands your health system and the challenges you're facing in leadership, and you can kind of just, you know, have that conversation. You have a buddy that's outside of your department too, because I think sometimes that's really important for lab, because we talk to ourselves and we get ourselves really amped up, you know, right. We feed off of each other. And so sometimes it's really helpful to kind of step away and go maybe see your friend in education or your friend in nursing or whatever, and just kind of be like, I need to clear my head. I just wanted to say hi and talk to you. And like, this is what's going on. And I have this problem. And like, what do you think? They have a different perception. They come at things in a different way. And sometimes it can really help illuminate things that you didn't consider. I also find that it helps take me down a notch. Like if I'm amped up about something, mm-hmm. and I like bleh, to my friend in project management, and he may say something back and just be like, well, what about this, Melody? Like, did you think about that? Or don't forget, they're doing the best that they can, right? He'll help remind me to take the gracious assumption in the same way I can do that for other people when they come to me. And I think that just helps you reframe and say, you know what? Yep, we're all here to do the right thing. Maybe I'm being a little extra today,
No.
right? Like I need to take it
No.
down, you know, like
No.
however that may be. But it, you know, it I think it really does help just to know you've got people with you know,
Right.
and the same, they're not, you're not, your challenges are not that much different from anybody in a different department. You just come at them in different ways.
So if you have a laboratory new manager or new supervisor that's listening, and you know, there are so many talks out there that talk about going from peer to supervisor. And so this is a person who is new in their leadership career, or you know, just maybe extremely introverted, you know, and has kind of stayed in their cave and has kind of bought into nobody cares about the lab and nobody likes me, everybody hates me, guess I'll go eat worms. What would be your advice on how to start? On how to, you know, get outside of your box, get outside of your laboratories, and start making friends and start building relationships.
I think the biggest thing is to start reflecting. Reflective practice is really just something that we need to do. When you have a conversation with someone outside of your department, take a minute after that call and like reflect. Like, what went right in that conversation? What didn't? I think a good question to ask yourself is, what does great look like for you when you think of having an integrative lab practice at your institution? Like, what does great look like? And maybe for you, it's that my door is open and people can come in and they know that they can come in when I'm here in the building. Maybe that's all it is. Maybe that's all you physically can do. Or maybe it's that, hey, I get invited to meetings that I should be at. And then write down your thoughts and start mapping out like how I would accomplish that. Like if I want to be at the meeting, the interdisciplinary meeting that somehow lab didn't get an invite to, who do I need to talk to? And I know that sounds a little calculating, but it's really just intentionality. And it's a decision to be intentional. Like, oh, the person who organizes this meeting is Brendan. I really need to get to know Brendan and let him know who I am and what I do. And that may mean take Brendan to lunch or Brendan to coffee or, you know, swing by his office and just get to know him. I think you just have to take small steps. I know for some leaders, it's really difficult just for them to leave their door open, but that's a good first step.
You know, and if you're if you really struggle with, you know, personal interactions, one thing that I've done also is just simple emails, you know. A lot of times when there's turnover in the organization and now you've got a new person over registration or you've got a new person over environmental services, and in some places they might call that housekeeping, I send them an email and just say, "Hi, I understand you're new to our organization. My name is Stephanie. This is my role. If you need any help or have any questions about my department, here's my number. I'm happy to meet you." You know, and just taking, making that small step, to kind of put yourself out there.
Yeah, and if you have, I find a lot of newer leaders, and maybe this is just because of how we've grown up with more and more internet. You know, if you have like a Teams like chat or a Skype chat or whatever, you know, you might have at your organization, a lot of people like that. I'll do that a lot with new managers. I'll just like ping them and say like, "Hey, I'm so and so. Nice to meet you. Have a great day," or whatever, you know. And then you're kind of chatting in real time if they're available.
Right. So as we wrap up, I do have one, actually I have two final questions for you, but one would be if you can think back earlier to your career, what's one piece of advice that you know now that you wish you could have told yourself earlier? Like if you could go back and visit your early self in the laboratory medicine profession, what's one piece of advice you would have said, "Melanie, look, I'm just going to help you out. Make sure you remember this."
Yeah, and I think that's like a scary thought for anybody in leadership. You're like, oh my God, if I could see myself in my first gig, you know. I think for me, it's that not every discussion is a battle to be won. Nor does it have to be that. Maybe I just want to talk to you, and that's okay too, or I want to have an educational conversation, and that's fine. And I think the other part is that emotional intelligence is just as important as book learning. Really understanding how people are feeling and the emotions they're bringing into a conversation before I reply with what I know to be, quote unquote, the right answer from a technical standpoint. has been the biggest thing I wish I would have known more and known sooner.
Yeah. So if I know this is a very abbreviated touch point on this, like I said, you know, the entire hour long session you did at that conference gave a lot more details, but podcasts can only be so long. So sorry, listeners, we kind of have to do, you know, we have to do a brief summary of it. But although it was a dynamic session, and Melanie has some awesome ideas and insights on this topic. So if listeners wanted to reach out and connect with you after listening to this, can you let all of our listeners know how they can connect with you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn. It's Melody Boudreaux Nelson. There's not that many of us wrong with that Cajun name. But you can find me. I'll friend you and or link connect to you, whatever the word is, on LinkedIn. And then my email is M as in Mary Nelson 11 at kumc.edu. So you're free to reach out to me as well via email.
All right. Well, thank you for being in the studio today, Melanie. This was a great talk. I really enjoyed talking to you.
I enjoy talking to you as well. Good luck out there to all those listeners. You can do it.
It's a scary world out there, but you got this.
You got it. You can do it.
We're your friends. Connect with us. We'll help you along the way. If you need a mentor, if you need a guide, reach out to myself or Melody, because we're all learning together. So I'm hoping that everybody got something out of this and you enjoyed this episode of Elaborate Topics, Elaborate Topics podcast. Couldn't get that out. Thank you for listening. Make sure you tune in next week to another new topic. Again, we want to hear from you. And so what are some strategies you've used to build your interpersonal relationships? Or what are some further questions you have if you're struggling with this point? Make sure you drop a comment in our Elaborate Topics group on LinkedIn, or connect with either one of us on social media, and we'll help each other out. This is all about networking and supporting each other through our professional journeys. And so until next time, have a great day and look forward to another episode next week.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.